Welcome everybody to Elevate Podcast, and I'd like to first of all say thank you to both Sean and Aaron for joining us, and they'll introduce themselves shortly. I'm Miranda, and I have the absolute pleasure of leading Elevate, and today we're having a conversation with Aaron Dimmock, who works at the Chapman Co. Learning Institute. And actually, we've had a number of conversations over the last few weeks, most of which have gone off on all sorts of tangents, unplanned, but have nonetheless been sort of just interesting and engaging and fun. So we've been talking about this for a while, and we find ourselves here today where it's going to be great to hear Aaron share some of his journey, and particularly how that sort of plays out in his life today and the links to the Institute. So thank you both for joining us. And I will hand to Sean next to say hi.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Sean Spurgeon, Learning Director at Elevate Performance. I have to say my journey started a while back. I'm going to do a shameless book plug for the guys. Probably one of the most read books I've done, Everybody Matters, written by Bob Chapman. And so I was inspired by that book a few years ago, and lucky enough to see Bob talk as well face to face in London. And ever since that moment, I've sort of, you know, the message just resonates with me. And then, you know, myself and Aaron, we had a conversation, you know, a few months back, and hearing your story was just amazing, and what you guys are doing. So, yeah, just super excited about hearing your personal story, but also the work that you guys are doing in the Institute. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Aaron.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you, Miranda. Thank you, Sean. Awesome to meet up with you today and have this conversation. I'm excited to get going with the questions and the conversation. Like you said, we've met a couple of times now over the last several months, and just incredibly excited for what it is that you all are leading and attempting to accomplish with your values and mission at Elevate, and yeah, taking part in this conversation. So thank you so much for having me, and right on over back to you.
Fabulous. And thank you. And thank you. So I guess a good opener for everybody would be talk to us a little bit about the sort of the Institute and, you know, how and why it was founded and kind of its core purpose. That'd be a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, fantastic. So I'm happy to share. And I'll start with it was about 5 years ago. So it was really ahead of when Everybody Matters was going to be published, that Rhonda Spencer, the Chief People Officer at Barry Way Miller, got together with a couple of folks on her learning and development team and Barry Way Miller University, which is an internal university for learning and development. They had this idea that based on the years of Barry Way Miller University helping folks grow and develop internally, that they would want to share those learnings external with external clients because they thought they were on to something. So yeah, about 5 years ago, a little over 5 years ago, the Barry Way Miller Leadership Institute was founded, and the co-founders, Brian Wellinghoff, Matt Wyatt, and Sarah Hanna. And Sarah was the director and is the director of Barry Way Miller University. The three of them co-founded the Leadership Institute to get this running. And they started taking on a couple of clients, and it resonated with folks, just the learning and development opportunities, the workshops, the keynotes that they started to provide. And as Barry Way Miller Leadership Institute grew, about little over three years into the journey, decided to rebrand in honor of Bob Chapman. So this was obviously after the book release, continuing to have those conversations and engage with clients around the globe to rebrand the Barry Way Miller Leadership Institute, Chapman & Company Leadership Institute. So that's how it came into being. And our team is 17 team members strong right now. And a very fortunate opportunity, obviously, with all the challenges going on in the world today, to share this message of building a better world through business and measuring success. We at Barry Way Miller measure success by the way we touch the lives of people. So it's really interesting to share that message, see how it resonates. And then from the consulting side with the Leadership Institute and learning and leadership and development, being able to customize and meet the client where they're at with their specific challenges and figure out how we can best move forward together to co-create what they need to address the challenges, issues, concerns that they have, and some of the objectives and goals that they have strategically for their organizations to move them forward.
Fabulous. And how does your personal journey weave into that? So how did, at what point did you arrive? How did you arrive?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking, Miranda. I'll make it brief, and if you want to hear more, obviously feel free to ask additional questions. What's that, Sean?
We definitely want to hear more. It's a good story. you're a very humble person, so yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'll be brief, and again, if you'd like to ask questions, go for it. But growing up in the United States, I was born in the state of Connecticut, but grew up mostly actually in the Midwest, in Indianapolis, Indiana, in a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. Had the opportunity to attend the United States Naval Academy, which is one of our military service academies. For me, led to a commission in the United States Navy. So I was a naval officer and a Navy pilot for a little over 20 years. And then a little over 4 years ago, retired from the naval service. And it was really, yes, after a career of aviation, I ended up with my last position being at the Pentagon, looking at leadership and character development across all the armed services for the Secretary of Defense directly. So it was an initiative that he had put in place, Secretary Chuck Hagel at the time, and charged his senior advisor for military professionalism to look at how the military at large is doing leadership and development. And as a Navy liaison for that particular team, learned a ton, obviously more about human behavior, organizational development, was able to synthesize my leadership opportunities over those 18 years into what it is that we can do through the centers of excellence throughout the Department of Defense and continue to build on the goodness, those pockets of goodness where things are really, really going well. One of the opportunities on that particular team was the opportunity to meet, I mentioned Rhonda Spencer, the Chief People Officer of Barry Waymiller. Well, she was extended an invitation by Simon Sinek, who's a good friend of ours. He came by D.C. Usually he was in Washington, D.C. every 6 to 8 weeks and would swing by the Pentagon to come up and high-five our team, see what was going on. And over about a two-year relationship, formally in that office, he had offered up, hey, there are folks that are in the public sector, private sector, nonprofit that are doing things really well in this particular space of leadership and character development. And he said he'd just like to invite them to the Pentagon to meet with our team, 7 members of our team, to just have a conversation about leadership and character development over a couple of days. And so Rhonda was one of the friends of Simon that he had extended the invitation to. And that's where I really had the opportunity to learn more about Barry Waymiller. Again, this was ahead of the book publication. So Rhonda was speaking specifically to the people-centric culture and truly human leadership, things that they talk about explicitly in the book. And she was just sharing, each person that came for that particular visit had a couple hours to share what it is that this looks like, this type of leadership looks like in their organizations. And what she had offered up in those couple hours just really resonated with me personally. And I knew that I was getting ready to retire in about a year and a half out of that Pentagon position, and just asked her if she would mind if we kept in touch. And she said, absolutely. And it wasn't just keeping in touch. We had the opportunity a couple of times to have, Barry Waymiller has a paper systems company that's right in Baltimore, Maryland, which is about a 45-50 minute drive from the Pentagon. So we had the opportunity. They were very gracious and hosted several admirals, generals, secretaries, undersecretaries from the Pentagon to go take a look at what this truly human leadership and people-centric culture stuff looked like. And then from there, the book was released. And then about a year later, I did reach back out to Rhonda. She said, great, this sounds awesome. Let me put you in touch. As Barry Waymiller at the time, Barry Waymiller Leadership Institute was getting up and running, she put me in touch with Matt Wyatt. Well, again, I mentioned him before, one of the co-founders. And then we had a conversation off and on for about a year, actually. Yeah. I was an independent consultant. Until they got it where it got the Leadership Institute to a position where they thought they could expand the team now based on the client demand. So I was the opportunity to come to St. Louis and gave a presentation, got to meet members of the team, and at the end of the afternoon, they made an offer that I couldn't refuse. It was awesome to join the Leadership Institute at that point.
Fabulous. Oh, my goodness. And if you now look back, how do you see that your time in the Navy sort of informs or influences your approach, your personal view, and your approach around leadership?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks again, Miranda. Really, for me, having the opportunity to be on so many different teams, be a member of so many different teams in different roles on those teams was just tremendous. And when I first got through flight school, became a winged naval aviator, and went through some final training before actually going operational, my first flight operationally was when things weren't going so well in Bosnia and Kosovo. And so the opportunity, right, as a fresh new naval aviator, operating, immediately being in a position to serve folks that were going through some very difficult times in those areas, those regions, and seeing what that looked like. And then a couple years later, I had the privilege actually to fly over New York City Ground Zero on September 11th, 2001, and off the Atlantic coast to provide imagery, surveillance, and communications to support getting the U.S., at least on the Atlantic coast, through that evening and into the next day, all the way to the things, operations around the globe, obviously concentrated in the Middle East there for a while, but also Central and South America and over in the Far East, just operations to support what we hope is good things going on, and people being able to, you know, decrease the likelihood that they're going to have some nasty, counterproductive, bad human behavior stuff going on, and taking in that, and also learning about the cultures that we were in, and helping support, learning about different people literally around the globe. It was just tremendous. I mean, you talk about a laboratory for leadership and learning. To get out of the United States and spend a significant amount of time of the past 20 years, plus being able to learn more about folks and see the goodness that is out there, and then encouraged by that, you know what's going on, even though we don't hear about it as much. So maybe it'll start to change. But yeah, just fascinating, whether it was tactically and operationally, employing the aircraft and weapons in service of being able, as I mentioned before, to try to help the people that needed help. And then the inner dynamics, the human behavioral dynamics on all of those different teams, because rest assured, I was not on great teams all 20 years, right? No. There were some not so great teams in that mix, but I also had some teams that were absolutely brilliant. And there were a couple of main reasons why, not the least of which was that human interaction component. How is it we got along with each other, interacted with each other to be able to accomplish whatever mission, whatever goal we were asked to accomplish. So all of that saying, I feel fortunate for the fact that whether it was sports in grade school and high school and college, and then getting into a military career, being able to learn over those last three decades of what human interaction looks like and what effective teams and ineffective teams look like, and now being able to put that into practice with Barry Waymiller and the Chapman & Co. Leadership Institute within a framework of truly human leadership, people-centric culture, and for the Leadership Institute itself, our mission is to illuminate potential and ignite human connection so people have the opportunity to thrive. And so I felt that was exactly where I needed to be to put all of this life experience and learning and practicality, not theory, not just theory, but theory with practice, and being able to share with all the clients that we've had the opportunity to interact with. So I've talked probably way too much for that.
No, not at all.
I've got a question for you, actually. I found it fascinating. It's a great story. And I think if you linked back to Simon Sinek and about having a why and a purpose that he talks about, and I just admire so much you guys that, you know, in the Institute, that you've got this clear purpose and clarity around what you're trying to achieve. And it's, you know, bigger than the organization. It's, you know, trying to change lives and change business to change the world, which is just amazing. And I just get sort of excited about that. And I think I'd love to hear a bit more about the sort of truly human leadership piece, because there's so much that I've been inspired by and actually stolen actually and shared in terms of people we talk to. So things like you guys talk about accountable freedom or accountable responsible freedom in terms of giving people permission to do the right things in the moment and make decisions for themselves. You guys talk a lot about listening and truly listening to people. All these concepts just, you know, so, you know, refreshing and great when you talk, when you hear so many bad stories in the world about leadership and about ineffective teams and et cetera. So I'd love to hear a bit more about the human leadership side of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So specifically for the truly human leadership proposition, thanks, Sean, is people, purpose, and performance. And it's really, how is it that listening, so I'll start there. The listening component is significant because listening is a way that we can actualize caring for another person. And when we do the listening well, the empathy starts to fuel itself, that we meet the emotion of the other person with compassion and listen and sit with them in that space. So we're not only hearing the facts that they're conveying about their situation, but we're sitting in the feelings with them. That's tremendous. And that's a lot of what Bob Chapman has done over the decades. And really, it fuels what's in Everybody Matters, that going around, keeping your mouth shut and actually listening and observing what's going on and asking really, really terrific open-ended questions. And what I mean by terrific is when we ask a question to someone, and they pause or they look up or they might even do both of those and then say, wow, that's a really good question. Like that pauses them to think and then offer up something that they really hadn't synthesized before. And that's where the substance of truly human leadership really resides. We're trying to dial into what is it folks are seeing? What is it folks are feeling as a part of the organization? And then figuring out where frustrations are, where roadblocks are, and then together figuring out how to move through them or address them together. So it's really just, it's honing in on how can we care for people in a way that they understand that this is real, it's genuine, it's authentic, and we're trying to relate to them so that we both uncover what needs to be uncovered to then move forward together. So that's about as plain as I can put it. And then you have the purpose, like you said, we building a better world through business is that purpose piece. And then I mentioned it before, but we measure success by the way we touch the lives of people. Like that is a measure of a purpose, something that we can look at. It's tangible and say, hey, in this interaction, what are we going to make of this? How can we talk the way we're both receptive to each other and figure out what needs to be done to move forward? So the listening is such a huge component. And then you had also mentioned from a leadership standpoint, we have three fundamental values, which are seeking to understand, showing up to serve, and making it better. And those elements drive what I mentioned before to illuminate potential and ignite human connection so people have the opportunity to thrive. When you focus on seeking to understand, that's the listening element and the caring element. Showing up to serve, it's other-oriented. And then making it better is just having the conversation, whether that's a 30-second impromptu feedback, giving the feedback to someone, hey, this was the situation, these were your behaviors, or this is your behavior, and this is the impact that it's having, all the way to longer team conversations that there's a serious frustration out there because of a systemic issue, a structural issue, and we need to talk longer about how to address that together and make it better together. So that's a snapshot of both truly human leadership, what fuels people-centric cultures, and then how the Leadership Institute has that conversation with folks around people, purpose, and performance.
I love that. I saw something on LinkedIn the other day, actually. I never saw it before. I never thought about it. There was a little meme that said, silence is an acronym of listening. Silence.
And I just thought about it for, and you just think about it for a minute and how many leaders actually listen to interrupt, but to your point, rather than listening to understand.
Yes.
I catch myself doing it all the time. And, you know, there's another great Walt Whitman quote that always sticks in my head, which is presence begets presence. And it's something I've tried to take into my family life as well, where, you know, you sometimes, at work, you put the charade on sometimes and you make the extra effort to listen to people and to ask great questions. But then you're tired, you come home, and you don't always bring those skills to the most important people, which is your family. So for me, the journey has been trying to do both. And I still catch myself listening to interrupt, but I'm on that journey. But I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And building on that point a little bit, and then Miranda, it looked like you were going to say something as well. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, I was coughing. So I muted.
Oh, right on.
So you didn't get yours.
She knows I don't listen. That's why she laughed.
But you're exactly right, Sean. And that's it's a wonderful point to make, because overarching, the goal of truly human leadership is how can we care for each other in the workplace? So yes, bring our best selves to work each day and accomplish the best that we can accomplish as a team, so much so that we get energy from that and maintain the energy that we can absolutely go back to our families and show up in ways there that continue to be supportive and not drained constantly and fatigued. So yes, you hit on a phenomenal point. How can we care for each other in the work environment, such that the home environment with family, friends, local community actually benefits because of that?
Yeah, and it's so important. You think about, I know you guys talk about stress at work, and stress is one of the main it's a chronic illness, and it has a massive impact on people's lives, you know, inside and outside of work, and their actual, you know, people are dying. You know, I think on a Monday morning is the time that the most heart attacks happen. And, you know, that is terrible. And, you know, a lot of that's driven by the workplaces that some people have to show up to. And, you know, that caring message for me is so important. And I wonder sometimes, I don't know, when you're sharing that message with some businesses that might perceive the word care is a bit fluffy, do you get that kind of response, or how is the message received?
Yeah, I kind of have if I can add just a facet, because it's a similar question that I was sort of sitting with. So let's see if it rolls into one question, which is around, much of what you say resonates so much with us, and we talk a lot about, you know, people matter. I guess even pre sort of COVID, but even more now, it feels like more and more businesses are shifting even further to the sort of focus on the typical commercial metrics, because the pressures are immediately financial. And so the response that meant so many businesses are looking for is how they shift those metrics. So linked to sort of Sean's question, how has that changed in terms of the conversations you're having, or how do people respond when actually the angle, because we're sold, but to those organisations that aren't sold, how are you able to sort of penetrate that immediate wall of, well, are you going to increase sales, or reduce attrition, or reduce my cost base? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, terrific complement of questions. And what we've been doing in the conversations we've been having with clients is to answer the first part of the question, there are organizations that will balk when we start talking about caring, but they aren't familiar with it, because that's not what's driven them in the past. So it's interestingly enough, for some teams, it's just a bit foreign, and because it doesn't click for them, because that's not the mode of operating that they've been used to. And, you know, you go out and get the sale. I'm providing the service and the product. I got them a great price. That's, you know, that's what I do. Or we're more hierarchical, and what I say goes. And I've been in the industry for 30 years. I know it. So I'm letting folks know, because that's an efficiency thing. We get all of that. But then we also propose the fact that when there are challenges when you overextend those types of control mechanisms and those ways of behaving that limit or decrease an individual's decision to give you their best effort and put forth their best effort. So with several clients, we've entered into conversations and consulting around caring communications. How is it that you can speak with your team members, with your employees, what is going on, and enter a conversation that includes them, keeps them informed, and then figures out a way systemically or structurally to help make decisions together moving forward. So that's really where we've nested it. And yeah, there are folks that have questioned the care proposition, but then when we do start to chat with them and we get into some measures, whether it's an assessment or going in and doing listening sessions and interviews and tabulating both that quantitative and qualitative data when warranted or when requested, and having folks share their voice and capturing that in a way that informs the leadership such that they can take those elements and in a very caring way have open conversations with the members of their team. Even through these trying times, like one of our clients, their purpose is to care for people on life's journey. And we helped them in that purpose discovery a little over a year and a half ago. And it has been a focus for them now. Not that caring for people wasn't a focus before, but now that a flashlight has been put on it, it drives their decision-making. And then they ask for some assistance with how they could communicate to their team layoffs that were coming up and how they could go through that. So the opportunity for that executive leadership team was to share upfront, because of the decrease in demand for our product, we will not be able to keep the number of team members that we currently have. Yeah. So in order to help us make this transition, we have a few options. And then you meet the folks that are near retirement, or at least they decided to meet with the folks that were near retirement. And if they wanted to exercise an early retirement option, they could put that in motion. For folks that were already eligible, just having the frank conversation with them. How much longer do you plan on staying with the team? And if you would like to stay, we'll make those arrangements because you bring so much to the team. If you're looking at retiring, let us know how we can help you with that conversation, and then we'll provide someone else an opportunity, perhaps down the road, to fill your position. All the way to the ones at the local levels for, again, how is this, and timeline-wise, how can we help folks transition with the time that we're looking at and set them up as best we can for whatever the follow-on opportunity is for them. So it's not overcomplicated, but all of those acts individually, meeting the emotion with compassion, meeting folks where they're at, and first and foremost, entering into a conversation that you can listen to, and it's not done to people, that is significant because you allowed their voice to be shared. And just that act allows folks to feel cared for, to feel they belong, even if they know the outcome is I'm not going to be on this team much longer. They care for me because they told me what's coming. And now I have an opportunity to make and influence some decisions and get ready to make that transition.
It's spot on, and we touched on this on one of our conversations previously, and it's huge because actually it almost becomes less about the outcome, because you could have all of those conversations, there not be anybody who wants to retire now, or even looking at that, you may explore all the other options and they not be appropriate or applicable for one reason or another. And at which time the organisation may have to take some very tough decisions. It just resonates so much because for us, our argument has always been, but if you have to make the tough decisions, but you're then having that conversation with a group of people that then say, but at least we knew what was going on. We had an opportunity to contribute. We felt like there could be a way that we could influence, and we now find ourselves here, but clear that as an organisation, they genuinely have explored all the options. Whereas typically what happens is organisations come say, yeah, we've looked at everything else and it's not going to work, and so we're now going to go through a process of deciding how this shapes up. And so, and so it's amazing. I love that piece that says it actually isn't about the outcome. And so the outcome can be crappy. But it's just the fact that people will be much more accepting, and people may leave your organization, but are more likely to leave still be advocates of your organization, because they say, actually, they deal with the really crappy stuff really well. And leave and still talk very positively about you as an organization, even if you've, even if you've had to lay them off or make them redundant, as we would say in the UK. So,
I think
we don't see enough of that.
Yeah, I agree, Miranda. You've made the points really well. And I think sometimes caring can be misunderstood for not, shying away from sort of tough conversations as well. And, I think something resonated with me from the book and talking to you, Aaron, is about, if you care about your family, and sometimes you have to be tough on your family because you love them. And, people see that, and sometimes you have to deliver tough messages like Miranda's describing there. And people, they'll see your intent. If your intent's good and you genuinely care about them, they understand. They may not like the outcome, as you say, Miranda, but, you care about them through the process. And that there has to be a level of authenticity there for me, but also there has to be something in the emotional bank account from before. You can't just switch on care, for one moment. It has to be a thing that builds over time, that you demonstrate that care and that love for them. I use that word, and people don't, love your people. You're in service. Yeah. So I'm rambling on. But.
Yeah,
that's a terrific point to make. Absolutely. Care. You can be harsh and direct to get people's attention and absolutely still be caring. One example that I use is our youngest son, Peyton. When we're playing ball out in the front yard, say throwing a baseball out in the front yard, and I miss one of his throws and the ball goes out into the road and he gets ready to take off for the ball and I see a car coming, I'm not going to be in a quiet voice saying, "Hey, Peyton, wait. I'm going to be yelling at my lungs and telling him exactly to stay in the yard because there's a car coming, in a pretty stern voice to get his attention and save him from injury and potentially his life, right? Yeah. Because I see something he doesn't, and then I'm communicating in a way that he's going to be able to react to and be receptive to. That is a sign of caring. So yes, you're exactly right.
And I think it's about when it's balanced. So I think if people, you build relationships, and what they see is that at the same time, you will be tough on them. So I definitely, feel like you can have those really straight conversations where you're clear that you expect more from someone because you know they're capable of more. And so actually, it's not you've given 100%, but it wasn't quite enough. What you're saying is you didn't give 100%, and that's the problem. But similarly, that same person will see you go into bat for them. So it's that whole thing that says, I will almost fight with you if we need to, if that's to get where we need to go. But it comes from a place because I respect you. I know what you're capable of. I want you to do the best you can do. But at the same time, I will also go into battle on your behalf with the same sort of veracity. So I think to Sean's point, it comes back to intent. So I think it's, listen, I may be quite known for being a bit of a straight shooter, but actually the people that I work with and have built great relationships go, sometimes I might, I could be gentler in my articulation of something, and I own it. So it's been on my, I'm very much work in progress in that space, and probably will be until I take my last breath. But at the same time, they understand it comes from a good, my intent is good. And they also then are quite comfortable and say that veracity is now going to have that fight over there on my behalf. So it's, I think it's not all about gentle packaging and gentle language. There are times it needs to be hard and unequivocal. Unequivocal?
Without a doubt. And that's huge, because what I hear you saying is you have a foundational relationship within which folks can assume you are positively intended, therefore they are going to be receptive to what it is you're saying. I mean, fundamentally, that's what we're talking about. Whether I come across as direct or a little bit more louder in tone, or at times just a very frank, low-key conversation, either way, the individual we're talking to, they're listening to us and receptive to us because of that relationship and environment that that's significant. And then I'll throw in really quickly John Stuart Mill, his quote. I won't quote it fully, but he captures the fact that we're corrigible beings. Human beings are not incorrigible. We are at times, but most of the time we're corrigible, which means we're receptive and open to change, believe it or not. Yeah. Even for him, John Stuart Mill, it's almost a moral obligation. If I'm seeing you do something that you shouldn't be doing, I have a moral obligation to tell you because I'm seeing it and maybe you're completely blind to it. And if we have that relationship, we've built that environment, then I can go ahead and approach you and say, hey, you were doing this, it had this impact. What do you think? Oh, yeah, thanks for bringing it to my attention. I'll go ahead and change that. Like, that's what we're looking for, without a doubt. And when we have those exchanges, those are very caring exchanges.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about, yeah, because the compassion comes into that and the intent and the transparency of how you have that dialogue. And I think sometimes, you know, leaders will either be willfully blind to situations, or that they sort of let things fester or put off conversations that need to be had. And that over the long term for me has a sort of a greater impact on the culture, and that sort of bleeds out. And then you get the backbiting, then you get the politics, then you get the corridor conversations happening, trust image, psychological safety goes, sense of belonging. So it has a knock on it. These little things have a massive impact on the overall culture.
And huge, because, you know, when we talked before, you know, if your start position is that, you know, 99, there are stats, but anyway, you know, the vast majority of people come to work to do a good job. So right. Where they don't, with most, if you, you know, create the time and space to have the right conversation, you have a high chance of getting them back on track or getting them to the place you need them to be. So when people actually, leaders choose not to, often, you know, fast forward 3 months, you end up with someone who's, you know, entering into formal performance management situation, or and ultimately at risk of losing their job because somebody let something, you know, somebody delivered something that wasn't to the standard it should have been. It wasn't raised with them. So understandably, they said, oh, well, that must have been okay then. No news is good news. So they continue to make the same mistakes or do things in a way which isn't meeting the requirement unknowingly. So that's the challenge, isn't it? And people finding a way to kind of almost sort of nip things in the bud, because there aren't that many people walking around that if they're really clear that that's not what you ask for or not the way that you would you want to see it approached, would just blindly continue anyway. So yeah, it's we see a lot of that. I think it's fair to say.
And I suppose the flip side of that, because we were talking about sort of I suppose the tougher conversations about caring, and there's also the, for me, there's a massive deficit of deficit feedback, where people aren't spotting the things that people are doing right and praising progress, or just celebrating the small things that people change. And it just drives me mad, because, you know, people, as you say, Miranda, they come to work to do, well, I know I do, and I think many other people I speak to do come to work to do a good job. And, you know, how good does it feel when someone turns around to you and says, thank you, you've done a great job. And specifically, not just a walk past, pat on the back, and you've done a great job. And
right.
I've sat there all day and I've done nothing. Thanks for that. But actually, you know, thank you, Sean. You've done an amazing job there on X, Y, or Z. That lifts you. That can, I don't know about you, but it lifts me for the rest of the week sometimes, you know. And when we've been through tough times like COVID and the tough times that are coming up now, that's so important to me. But
And what about the link? Because there's something around authenticity, isn't there? Because I actually was found myself furiously commenting on I think it was an HBR post today, actually, that was talking around, you know, tricks that managers and leaders miss in terms of motivating their people. And there's, you know, I was reading it and envisaging those leaders that have reminders in their diary to send a note, say, great work team, and it lands and it's not timely and it's not authentic and it's not sincere, because actually it just says great work, because it's ticking a box. They can say, yes, I motivated my team this week. Because it's not authentic, what they're not able to say is talk about what was so amazing about the piece of work. So everybody reads it and says, yeah, he or she hasn't even looked at it, or they haven't read it. That's just the standard great job. Or those that then think, actually, what I'll do is I'll go for a hugely public acknowledgement of someone because they'll love that. But again, if it's not real, and I ended up in a bit of a debate today with someone around that stuff. So it's kind of, you want to be catching people doing things right, but people that, you know, but the other extreme is not walking around just every 5 minutes saying, great job, nice work, brilliant, which is then too far the other extreme. So it's, for me, it's not about frequency, it's about authenticity is the key.
Yeah, that's huge. And there, just hearing you talk, Miranda, there were a couple of things that came to mind. First and foremost, definitely, and Sean, thanks for getting us started down this path, like the pockets of goodness that I talked about with at the Pentagon that we were looking for, like offering people praise and recognition more than we're coming at them from the developmental side is what actually fuels why people would want to perform well. Mm-hmm. So it's there's no question that if we keep getting pummeled because of just the stuff that we're doing wrong, eventually we're going to walk. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, there are a couple of more positive or affirmative things that I'm being told about than the developmental. That's significant. So that's one piece, that ratio, more affirmative positive than negative, because if it flips, then we're on a bad path. The other is, I love what you said, Miranda, and it's, we remember those elements of praise when they are genuine, proportional, and timely. Like as soon as I see it, if I can tell you, that's fantastic. And if they know something about me, again, from the relationship piece, I know something about you, it's genuine. And then the proportionality is you don't get $1 million for doing what's in your job description per se, right? You can absolutely get a thank you, like a handwritten note for a few sentences that says, hey, you really made me feel this way because you did this and it impacted myself, the team. And that's the message. If you can capture your feelings about what it is they did, their behavior and the impact that they had, that's huge. And that's when you look back at your thank you notes and some of the notes that mean something to you, they have those elements in it. Someone was able to very clearly communicate how they felt because of something you did and the impact it had. So those elements are huge, huge drivers of an environment, a culture, a people-centric culture that now we're starting to head somewhere on the performance scale very positively.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was trying not to find my mind going down the line. I've been training a puppy, and it's really interesting. Anything you read about puppy training says you ignore the stuff that isn't the way it should be. So if they make a mistake, actually, largely, the recommendation, you ignore it. But what you do is every time you catch them doing something right, you reward it. So it was interesting you were saying that. I was like, I've been doing that a lot with this puppy. But it does seem to be working. So yay!
It works for puppies, works for humans, doesn't it?
I mean, yes.
I did this a few years ago, and I was working in a bit of more of a toxic culture, but I thought where the feedback was less, it was more deficit focused than sort of praise. And I used to keep a smile file where I did get praise, and I'd pop the email or pop the stuff into my folder, and I'd look back on those days where I felt, oh my God, I must be doing something right, and look for those things. But you know, that can't be sustained in a culture. You know, people, they want to know. And I love what you said as well about just thanking them. It's so simple with the authenticity, and it can mean so much to someone. And just, really important to me. Sorry, Amanda, I interrupted
you. No, not at all. And I think you're right, because it's also people can sort of regularly catch you doing things right. Are they catching you doing the right things right? Because if I know that I've done something that for me was a bit of a stretch, but not massive, and you've kind of said, oh, that was amazing. But on the day that I do something that really took me outside of my comfort zone and meant I worked half the night, and you don't acknowledge that, 27 acknowledgements prior don't make up for the time when I really felt like I'd gone out on a limb and I got nothing. So there is a danger, you know, so that's why I think people will always get caught out when it's just the every so often I'm going to make a point of doing it. You could do it three times a year if it's the right three times and done in the right way for the individual. And so for some, public acknowledgement is their worst nightmare. For some, that's absolutely what they would seek. So it's also, yes, we talked about appropriateness and what works for that individual.
Which by definition, now you've hit on actualizing care, yeah, right? That's another form of caring, because you know the person at least that well enough that even taking the praise, I know there are some folks that are elated if we just have a quick one-on-one and I'm able to hand them a note and say, thank you very much, as opposed to getting the whole team together and yes, saying, this is what this person did. It's not that it's not well-intended, but we are focusing on how the individual will want to receive it. Yes. And we did, if they did do something that warranted kind of a public, more public announcement, the sign of caring there is actually just to ask them, would you mind? So appreciate, yes, them and one-on-one, and then would you mind if we share this with the group, and either you're welcome to share it or I can share it or we can do it together. And then you give them the check-in, and if they say, no, I'd really rather not, then you say, golden, well done.
Yeah, agree. So I'm just mindful of time, and the next question is, there's three bits to it. So essentially it's sort of, if you were to give sort of three nuggets of advice to leaders right now, what would they be?
Oh, it's such a phenomenal question. And the
no question.
Focus that's required for just three, right? And I will offer up these three just based on, again, whether it's, I can't put it on one thing, but the opportunity, the childhood I had, some of the challenges in high school, and obviously going through a military career, and now the last 4+ years post-military, I can kind of funnel it down to three things, and they are centered around my personal values of humility, service, and candor. So the three bits that I would offer up is leaders, especially, it's really at all times, which is what we would go for. And when you're doing those behaviors at all times, then when we do hit rough waters, we're able to make them shine even more, perhaps. But the first would be humble. And the simplicity there with that, you know, you can take all three of these in all kinds of different directions. But for me, being humble is the focus on the fact that it's about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about us. It's not about I. It's not about me. It's about us. So humility to know that we may be wrong. We may be seeing it a little bit differently than other people. Being open to conversation. Being curious. That all stems from humility. A focus on it being about us as a team.
Yeah.
The next is to serve. Service piece. And when we serve, we mentioned it a couple of times before, but one fundamental form of service for me is to meet emotion with compassion. So how is it that you are having these conversations with folks on your team that they are the ones, because of your behaviors and the way that you are receiving and listening to them, they feel listened to? So a way to serve, a way to actualize care, is to create those fora or that environment where folks actually do feel heard. And then the last is to exercise candor. And we've talked about it a couple of times.
Yeah.
For how is it that I can care for the individual personally such that they are the ones that feel cared for? It's mm-hmm. not interpretation of, oh, I care for you. They have to feel it in order for it to be authentic and genuine and valid. So it's caring personally while being able to challenge folks directly, having the conversations that need to be had. And those are those could be 30-second or 2-minute conversations where you're exercising candor on a regular basis, which fundamentally is I'm offering up my perspective to the two of you such that you feel compelled to offer up your perspective as well. We get it all out there, and now we're able to have a more productive conversation because of that. So be humble, serve, and exercise candor are really the three bits that I would offer up. And I would also caveat that in the spirit of being humble, I don't know at all. Those are three bits that I'll be working on continuously, and I'll keep learning. But just based on that 30 years of experience, that's really where I'm focusing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I'm trying to build on that. I think for me, they really resonate. Maybe the sort of the Catholic Irish upbringing in the background for me was the service piece, especially, and humility and the candor. But in service, even when I was sort of young, an 18-year-old serving sort of in a shop, or when I was starting through university, I was in service to every person that came into my store. And in the same way, when I was lucky enough to lead a group of people, I sort of carried that mentality through with me. And sometimes that's not subservient, that's I'm in service to you.
Right.
I think that was a lesson for me, because I have a habit personally of being a people pleaser. So, where you take it to the other extreme, which is like any strength can be an overplayed.
Any virtue can be a vice. Yeah.
Exactly. What I'm looking for. Yeah. So they really resonate with me, Aaron. So thank you for sharing them.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing as well, Sean. I appreciate it.
I'm astounded that we kind of covered the questions that we had planned in 2 minutes short of the hour. I'm sure we could definitely have taken many of them on great tangents as we have before.
Sure.
But it's been amazing. Is there anything like you would like to share in closing, Aaron, just anything really?
Oh, well, first and foremost, thank you both for the opportunity to have this conversation. I look forward to more as we move forward into the future, knowing what it is you all are attempting to accomplish with your purpose and elevate. And then also know for me, just humbled by the opportunity to have the conversation, right? And talking about things that, I think everyone kind of understands. I think we can make a baseline assumption that around the globe, folks, they kind of get it. But the challenge is when you're trying to actually do it. And so having these conversations and then going into the arena, into the environments that we find ourselves in, fighting for health, fighting for life, fighting for and trying to get an appreciation for, yes, the challenges, but how is it that we can come together as a team to continue to provide a service and product so that our team stays in existence, mm-hmm. and the local society at large, we're able to continue to press through this and become a little better because of it. And that's the truly human leadership proposition. How are we coming together to address some very serious challenges? Because whether it's the current circumstances or whatever awaits us in the future, there will always be thing that we have to address as a team, continue to evolve and get better as we're doing it. So no, I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you on behalf of the Chapman and Company Leadership Institute, Perry Waymiller, as well. Thank you for the conversation. As I mentioned, so grateful for it and look forward to keeping in touch with you and having some more conversations.
Definitely. Like, I already can't wait for the next one. So thank you so much. And thank you, Sean. Is there anything you'd like to say, Sean?
No, absolutely. Reiterate what you've said, Amanda. Thank you for your time, Aaron. It's much appreciated.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you both for yours, without a doubt.